that really kind of aren't. And look at the DK Metcalf example. This is a guy they liked in Seattle, but the price on him, the contract he was going to want, is beyond what they thought he was worth, or maybe even what they thought any wide receiver might be worth. So he ends up getting traded. Now, I'm not saying Washington is in that camp, but there are some teams that would probably be willing to compensate Terry McLaurin at a higher level than Washington has been so far. I don't get the sense that they're interested in trading him, but Adam makes an interesting point. That gets to the issue of how different teams see this differently. Pittsburgh was willing to give DK Metcalf $33 million a year. Seattle didn't want to talk about it.
Stan Graziano, longtime NFL ESPN insider. Excuse me, ESPN NFL insider. He was out there boots on the ground in Ashburn this morning for practice, and he joins us right now on the guest hotline. Make sure you give him a follow on the X app at Dan Graziano ESPN. Dan, we appreciate you making some time for us, brother.
Yeah, my pleasure. How you doing?
I'm good, man. So I didn't get to – I just listened to your hit from this morning on Get Up, and I think you hit on a very interesting point that I know a lot of folks here locally are not willing to get to yet because Terry is obviously such a beloved figure here in the nation's capital. So I'll start right off with this. Where are we at right now in this negotiation, I guess, between Terry and Washington? And from your perspective and folks that you've talked to, is there an end in sight? Or do you think this thing drags too close to the regular season, maybe Labor Day weekend?
Yeah, I mean, someone's going to have to radically change their position. And so it's like, how dug in are the Commanders and how dug in are Terry McLaurin and his agent? And what's the pressure point where someone goes, okay, you know what, we'll come toward you a little bit and make some progress? Right now it doesn't sound like any progress has been made in quite a while, and that there's a pretty big difference between what the team is willing to pay and what Terry wants. So, you know, we're seeing a similar situation in Cincinnati with Trey Hendrickson.
Yeah,
you start to – the team tends to hold the cards because it's very rare for the player to sit out real games. It happens, but it's very, very rare. And if you're Terry McLaurin, you're making $20 million this year, you divide that by – you know, 18, you miss a
right.
game, that's a lot of money that you're leaving on the table there. Now, if you're willing to do it, then that gets the team's attention and maybe helps your case. But until we get to September, 7th, or whenever the first game is, and he's not there, then the team is justified in saying, you know what, we'll stand firm and wait for you to come to us.
Gross, the thing that's interesting to me is, like, you were out there today. I mean, this – We didn't see them throw the ball a ton, but, like, today was one of the better practices the offense has had, Dan. Like, it's been, you know, rough sledding, especially trying to get completions on the perimeter outside the numbers and then pushing the ball vertically.
Yeah.
Guys just aren't coming down with the football. Washington can't afford to go into this season without Terry McLaurin, Dan. Like, that's the thing that I keep going back to is, like, we know Terry's dug in with the number he wants, but from Washington's perspective, I mean, it would be, to me, organizational malpractice for them to let this thing drag out into the regular season, and because now you're impacting Jayden Daniels and making his life harder going into year number two where you're actually playing a big boy schedule rather than the soft schedule they played last year.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with every word you just said, and I think that that is, if you're Terry McLaurin or his agent, that's what you're kind of counting on, right? Like, you have a practice where you're throwing to, because Noah Brown wasn't out there, right?
Right, Noah was out there.
Practice where you're throwing to Deebo Samuel and Zach Hurst. I mean, you know, good players, but they are not going to lead you to the passing game you want to have. And you're taking away one of Jayden Daniels' great strengths, which is his ability to throw deep and accurately. So, but there's no one on the other end of that pass. It doesn't really matter how accurate it is. And I think you're absolutely right. If Terry McLaurin can scare Washington into thinking that they would have to actually find a way to win games without him, then maybe they change their mind. But right now, I think they have a real sense of what they want to pay a 30-year-old wide receiver and for how long, and it does not match what he wants. And that's, you know, yeah, look, you saw after the practice today, right? He's out there signing autographs.
Terry,
fans are chanting
Terry.
His name, right? Like, that's his leverage.
Yeah.
They love me. Your fan, don't mess with the vibes. They're good here for the first time in forever. So, like, let's keep this thing rolling. And so far, it hasn't worked. But as we get closer, maybe somebody does get scared.
So you said something earlier this morning that really, you know, caught my attention. I thought it was a very interesting point, and I want to know where you think Washington stands. The way you were, you and Shefty kind of alluded to the fact that, like, there's a belief amongst, I guess, owners and front office execs across the National Football League that they're upset with how the wide receiver market has kind of exploded here. Based on what you know, we're talking to folks in Washington, like, is that more of the situation here? Like, if Terry wasn't a 30-year-old wideout, would they be willing to give him a potential market-resetting deal if he was 27 or 28? Or are they one of those organizations that maybe fall in that category of, look, I mean, with the prevalence of 7-on-7, like, you can get him a dime a dozen coming out of the draft in the first round. Why pay a guy $30, $40 million annually? Where do you think Washington stands on that?
Yeah, I think, you know, that first number being a three is difficult for some teams. Now, you're right, to your point, if they had Jamar Chase, right? Like the Bengals are like the cheapest team there is, and they gave out the biggest wide receiver contract. So maybe there are exceptions, but when you get to the point, this is an analytics-driven organization from the very, very top. Right, so if they have data that shows 30-year-old wide receivers, you know, you start to see decline, et cetera, yeah, they're not going to deviate from their principles just because, you know, he's been a good guy.
Right,
that counts for something, but it doesn't count. Like it doesn't count for $5 million a year. So if he wants more money than DK Metcalf got, which is 33 a year, right? And DK is a couple years younger than he is. If you give him more than 33, now you're Justin Jefferson's at 35.
Yeah.
Like, he's not Justin Jefferson,
right?
So So I think if I were to guess, which I have to because no one's really given out hard information, I would guess that Washington would probably be pretty comfortable in the very high 20s and Terry wants it to be in the mid-30s, and that's a pretty big gap right now.
So let me also ask you this, Dan. I think I overheard you and Kime talking about this, and I think it's a...
you're eavesdropping.
Now, it's a very interesting point y'all made. The idea of, will Washington give Buddy Baker and Terry the opportunity to talk to other teams and see if they were willing to pay him? Do you see that being something that could potentially happen here?
I don't. I really don't. And we haven't heard it from Terry's end about, you know, that the clip you just played from Get Up this morning was off of Adam Schefter talking generally about, you know, the longer that Micah Parsons drags on, the longer that Trey Hendrickson drags on, the longer Terry McLaurin drags on, the more other teams start thinking about making a call. So Adam's not saying, you know, that Washington would consider trading him, but, you know, you would start to hear from teams. And certainly, like, once Seattle Seahawks figured out that what DK Metcalf was going to be asking for was beyond their comfort zone, then they start to talk about trading. But I don't get the sense that in Washington's case that that's on the table. I think, you know, the worst case scenario from their standpoint is play this thing out on the current deal and then see where things stand in a year. But I think they want him here.
Yeah.
He wants to be here. I believe they're willing to give him a contract extension. It's just not the one he wants, and so round and round we go.
Do you think we're at a point, Dan, where the relationship is starting to sour between the two parties, or is that not public information, I guess?
No, I don't get that sense. I mean, look, it's very easy when you're in a contract negotiation. Mm-hmm. You know, I go through it, you know, like every few
years.
That's
why everyone has agents.
It's very easy to take it personally, to start to get upset. Like, but that all goes away generally once the deal is done, right? Because you step back and you recognize this is just the process. And unfortunately, sometimes it gets a little, you know, icky.
Yeah.
But in the end, if everybody gets what they want or something close to it, then, you know, you go ahead. I mean, Terry McLaurin, he wants to play for the Commanders. He wants to catch passes from Jaden Daniels. Like, he's not going to retire over this.
Right.
So I think there's an outcome. There's a lot of making of the sausage stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like a month from now, he could be there and everything's fine. And And what were we all worried about? That's almost always how this thing ends.
Joined right now by ESPN NFL insider Dan Graziano. Give him a follow on the X app at Dan Graziano ESPN. The other angle that I'm looking at with this, Dan, is the fact that, you know, this Terry McLaurin last year had his breakout year with Jaden Daniels here. The Madden rankings came out today, Graz, and Madden has him as the sixth best wide receiver in the NFL. When you talk to executives and folks around the league, like, how is he viewed amongst the top pass catchers in football? Is he in that, like, second tier after a Jamar Chase and a Justin Jefferson, or do some folks view him in that light despite the age?
I think he's well-regarded. I think he's given pass because of the quarterback situation right. In Washington that preceded Jaden Daniels' arrival. You know that. I'm not telling you that you don't know. But, yeah, that's a good question. I think he's easily overlooked in some cases because he's a quieter guy.
Right.
And they haven't had a lot of success prior last year, and he was a third-round pick?
Yeah.
Third-round pick?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so that's not, you know, your draft status does stick to you a little bit in this league.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there are probably people in the league that, you know, passed on him and wish they hadn't, and maybe there's sour grapes about it, so they might underrate him a little bit. So, no, I think he's regarded as a number one wide receiver, but to your point, they're not all created equal. I mean,
right.
Jamar Chase is and Justin Jefferson are doing things that, you know, others can't do, and then you look at, you know, I don't know. I think part of the problem is DK Metcalf getting $33 million a year. Like,
that's
he's
a big
not that
problem.
Player.
He's not
that player. And they gave up a second-round pick and then gave him that contract because why? Because they knew they were getting Aaron Rodgers and they didn't want George.
See,
like,
Dan,
that's why
I look at it and go, okay, John Schneider's a very well-respected GM throughout this league. Just got an extension yesterday. If Schneider and company are going, hey, look, man, We love you, obviously. We drafted you, but we can't pay you that number. At what point do Adam Peters and company get there for Washington? Like, if this was – let me ask it to you this way, I guess, Graz. If they didn't have the you know, lightning-in-a-bottle season last year where they win 12 games and go to the conference championship, you think they would be more inclined, you know, to hear trade offers?
No, I think they would be more inclined to hear trade offers if they had drafted Jackson Smith and Jigba 2 years ago in the first round, like Seattle did.
Yeah, right.
But I'm not
right.
kidding. I mean, like that's the point here. They
yeah.
don't have a replacement,
yeah.
and they are not here for a step back season. But Dan Quinn, when he was head coach of the Falcons, went to the Super Bowl in his second year.
Yeah.
Like, he's not of the belief that you need to build this thing slowly. So they need Terry McLaurin, and I don't believe, I mean, unless you were getting an equivalent player back for him, like let's say there was another disgruntled receiver somewhere out there that, you know, other than that, I don't know why they, and even then, you know Terry McLaurin fits your culture. You know your quarterback likes him. Like, it just makes too much sense. I continue to think, while there doesn't seem to be any progress being made, and it looks like there's no light at the end of the tunnel, I just go back to, this almost always works out.
Yeah, almost like, always.
Almost, literally, almost every time. And when it doesn't, it's usually an off-season thing. Like, you know, DK Metcalf got traded in March. AJ Brown got traded in April. Like, that's
right.
the, you know, that's when these things happen, when you make those decisions. The fact that we're here the day before August and the Commanders, and he has not asked to go explore trades, and the Commanders have not put him out there in trades, that tells me that, you know, that they are not interested in having a season without him.
It also tells me, from McLaurin's standpoint, Graz, is that there's a date that him and Buddy Baker have circled of, all right, we're going to play hardball up until this point because we do want to get credit for this season and have the ability
right.
to hit free agency next year. But I look ahead, Graz, and obviously there'll be other wide receiver deals that, you know, help, you know, dictate the market. But when he does show up and say there is not a deal, do you see the franchise tag game getting sticky at the end of the year and heading into next offseason with this? Because Terry is hell-bent on his value, and I understand it totally when you look at the market at the position, and it seems like Washington's just as dug in here.
No, I don't, because the franchise tag is probably going to be over $30 million, and if they were going to do that, then they would just give him the contract.
Right.
Right? So, like, if they don't want to go over 30 on a contract, then why would they want to go over 30 on a franchise tag? So that's the way I look at that. I think, you know, you're telling the guy, like, this is what we think your value is. If he goes out and has a big year and proves you wrong and you win the Super Bowl, right, like, then maybe, okay, you either go, all right, you know what, we will reward that, even though it goes against what our data says we should do. But
yeah,
he's not going to be younger at this time next year.
No, he's not.
And so, right. So, you know, if anybody figures that out, please let me know. But it is definitely I think the best case scenario for everybody is they get to a deal and they find a way to extend him. But if not, and he plays it out, I find it hard to believe they'll be more inclined to give him $30 million a year next year than they already are.
Talking to ESPN NFL insider Dan Graziano. Dan, let's take a look at the division here for a second. I get in trouble on radio, Dan, when I say this, but give me your reaction to this statement. I think the gap between the Philadelphia Eagles and the Washington Commanders is bigger than the gap between the Commanders and the Cowboys. When I say that, what is your initial reaction?
Yeah, I mean, I can kind of see where you're coming from because the Eagles look awesome, and they were so good last year. And you can say, oh, well, they lost some guys on defense, and they did, but they've been drafting for years knowing when those guys were going to graduate out. So the Eagles on paper look like the best team in the league. They are the defending Super Bowl champions. They deserve all of that respect. Washington, sensational year, sensational quarterback, great people running the organization. You know, there's some stuff from last year that's going to be tough to do again.
Yes.
Like the fourth down rate was ludicrous.
Historically good.
The fourth quarter comebacks, yeah, record in close games. Like it's just so, I mean, if you do that again, then great. Or if you're good enough, if you've improved enough that you don't have to, okay, fine. But I think you're fair to be, I think what you're saying is has some merit to it because I think the Cowboys have gotten better.
Yes, they have. That's my bigger point, is they've had a hell of an offseason to me.
I don't think it's unfair or disrespectful to say that Washington last year overachieved.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? Like, right. I don't think anybody saw it coming, and that was a wonderful run, and maybe they're going to be great. But I do look at that and go, like, yeah, they were in the game, the NFC Championship game, but they weren't really in that game, and to get back to it is going to be challenging.
We'll give you a couple of quick hitters around the NFL before we let you go, Graz. We appreciate you making some time for us, man. The Carolina Panthers, Bryce Young kind of came on at the tail end of last year after getting benched for Andy Dalton. If you could look into your crystal ball, Graz, are they going to be in the quarterback market entering next year?
I'm going to say no. I think Dave Canales is good at his job.
Yeah.
And Bryce Young is in a position to build on the success he had late last year. I think it's really quite a story. He only got his job back because Andy Dalton got in a car accident.
Right.
Which is crazy about that. And then, like, by the time Dalton was healthy enough to play, he was playing too well to sit him. So I think that represents, you know, a turning of a corner for him. And they've beefed up a little around him. That's got a chance to be a decent offense.
Yeah, it does.
And so, no, I would say that they go into next off. My prediction would be they go into next offseason feeling decent about Bryce Young.
From the NFC South to the NFC West, rave reviews coming out of Santa Clara about how Brock Purdy has looked fresh off of his new contract extension. They gutted this roster, though, Graz, to, you know, pay their golden boy. Does it pay off for the San Francisco 49ers, you think?
Yeah, I sort of disagree with the notion that they gutted the roster. I think, you know, once they paid Brandon Ayuk, they were always going to move on from Deebo Samuel. They weren't going to keep both those guys. Now, Ayuk, we don't know when he'll be back from his injury, and so that they're a little bit behind the eight ball at wide receiver. However, Juwan Jennings has emerged as a top performer, and Ricky Pearsall is a first-round pick from last year. So they do have it. They still have George Kittle. They still have Trent Williams. Fred Warner, Christian McCaffrey, Nick Bosa, like they are.
There's a lot of really
good players on that team, right? Who have been to Super Bowl and all that good stuff. So yeah, I think if Trent and Christian McCaffrey are both healthy, then that offense probably bounces back to something like what it was a couple of years ago. They can't afford any more injuries at the wide receiver position, but, if Jennings is healthy and Pearsall is healthy and Ayuk is coming back at some point, I think that's it. You look at their schedule, it's tough to say, strength of schedule based on last year, because not every team is the same as it was the year before, but
we know that here.
They don't play a lot of last year's playoff teams.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be something to monitor from the West to the AFC South. Cam Ward had some pretty brutally honest comments yesterday about how the offenses look. Knowing what Stroud did in year one, knowing what Jaden did in year one, what type of chance do you give Ward to come resurrect the Titans next year?
I think solid. I mean, everything I hear about him seems to be that he's sort of wired for this, that he's capable of it. I think when you look at, the issues that they've had in practice when they haven't looked great, it's been about, him getting his timing down with his receivers.
Right.
It's not about his processing ability. It's not about his decision-making. It's not about his ability to diagnose. All that stuff is solid. He works his tail off. He's impressed the coaches with all the intangibles. So it's really just a matter of getting on the same page consistently with Calvin Ridley, with Tyler Lockett, with all the guys that he's going to be throwing to, and I think that's the kind of thing that could look a lot better in a month. So, yeah, I think they have a shot to be a factor in a division that's not the strongest.
We'll let you go on this. The top threat to the Eagles in both the NFC and the AFC. Who are those two teams for you?
Oh, the top threat to the Eagles in the NFC. I still think Detroit.
Yeah,
I know they lost the coordinators, but. I was talking to Dan Quinn this morning about last year and Jaden Daniels, and he said they wanted to build out a big offensive coaching staff because they thought if we have success, people are going to want to take our guys.
Right.
And so let's make sure the coaching group around Jaden is large enough that if we did lose some guys, he's still familiar with who's left. I find that interesting because it made me think about Detroit and them losing their coordinators and the way Dan Campbell has done a very similar thing in terms of developing his coaches, making sure that, these are still people that understand the program, that understand what they're all about, and that the players can connect with. So I do think that Detroit, will maybe take a minute to adjust, but I still think they're very good. Campbell's kind of the key, and I think their defense, their defense has to be healthier than it was last year by default.
And then the AFC, who would that team be for you in terms of the biggest threat to Philly?
Oh, AFC. I mean, look, Kansas City's won the AFC, they're the dominant team, and I think they've gotten better, so they deserve to be the favorite. I will say, I think this is the year where you could be looking at Buffalo as the one seed, because they're stacked, they're ticked off about how it ended again.
Yeah.
Talk about a schedule. They only leave the Eastern time zone once all season.
Oh, wow.
And they don't. And their list of opponents doesn't include a lot of last year's playoff teams either. So they're well positioned to maybe go in and get that bye for a change.
Dan, we appreciate you giving us some time as always, man. Good putting a name to the face, brother. Good meeting you earlier, man.
Well, I really appreciate you having me on, and it was nice meeting you as well.
Hopefully you give us some good juju here and we get this Terry thing done, man, because people are going crazy. Here in the nation's capital.
I don't blame him. I don't blame him.
That is Dan Graziano of ESPN. Make sure you give him a follow on the old X app at Dan Graziano ESPN. One of the absolute best. Talking all things National Football League. Wow. Really, really good, insightful conversation. A lot of good nuggets out of that. We'll react to the convo next. Plus, let you hear from Diana Russini of The Athletic, who had some very interesting nuggets about the Washington Commanders and their potential interest in trading Terry McLaurin. That is next here on the Team 980.